Today's Wednesday, March 27th, 2024, and this is 5 at 8. With you today are Linda Carlisle and Mark Overman. In this episode, we'll talk about Chinese President Xi Jinping meeting with American business leaders in Beijing to attract foreign investment back to China, the spread of Russian disinformation targeting Princess Catherine's health, French President Macron's shift towards a more aggressive foreign policy stance, U.S. investors facing pressure to sell their stakes in ByteDance, and Visa and MasterCard agreeing to a $30 billion antitrust settlement to lower credit and debit card fees for U.S. merchants. Story number one. Chinese President Xi Jinping is set to meet with American business leaders in Beijing to attract foreign investment back to China. The meeting, expected to include Apple CEO Tim Cook, aims to address concerns about the business environment in China. Despite challenges, some foreign companies express interest in increasing investment in China. IMF Director Georgieva suggests pro-market reforms are needed for China's economy to rebound. China has set a 5% GDP target for this year and plans to continue support for strategic sectors. The China Development Forum aims to facilitate discussions on economic growth and investment opportunities, as reported by Al Jazeera. Might I say, Linda, this meeting with Xi Jinping is a clear signal that China is open for business, and that's a big deal. I mean, Apple's Tim Cook himself is expressing optimism about increasing investment in the country. It's no secret China's been facing some economic headwinds, but this kind of confidence from a global tech giant like Apple, well, that's not something to brush off, you know?
I see where you're coming from, Mark. But we can't overlook the fact that last year, foreign direct investment in China fell by 8%. Many companies are rethinking their operations and trying to de-risk their businesses due to ongoing geopolitical tensions and an increasingly complex regulatory environment.
True, but let's not forget that it's a double-edged sword, Linda. Yes, there are challenges, but that's business. The companies who can navigate these waters and adapt, they're the ones who'll come out on top. And let's not forget the potential rewards. China is the world's second-largest economy after all.
Yes, Mark. But China's economy is also struggling with deflation and a protracted real estate crisis, not to mention the fallout from the pandemic. It's not just about weathering the storm. It's also about whether the journey is worth the risk. And for many companies, the answer might be no, given the current circumstances.
I hear you, Linda. But let's not underestimate the power of dialogue and negotiation. These meetings with Xi Jinping may open up opportunities for businesses to air their grievances and lobby for changes. Change doesn't come easy, but it's always possible, especially when there's a will. And the Chinese government seems to be showing that.
I agree dialogue is important, Mark. But let's remember that conversations and actual changes are two different things. The true test will be whether these discussions lead to concrete changes that can ease the worries of foreign investors. Until then, I believe skepticism is warranted.
Story number two. In a report from the BBC, Russian disinformation group is believed to have spread and intensified social media conspiracies about Princess Catherine's health before she revealed her cancer diagnosis. Security experts found signs of a coordinated campaign sharing false claims and divisive content, consistent with previous patterns of Russian disinformation. The group also targeted France's support for Ukraine. The spread of conspiracy theories was accelerated by fake accounts and troll farms, highlighting the challenge of tracking and combating disinformation online. The royal family's support for Ukraine has made them a target for foreign influence operations, seeking to erode public trust and sow discord. The online frenzy surrounding Princess Catherine's health has raised concerns about the impact of disinformation on individuals and the wider public. Do you know, Linda, this whole episode with the Princess of Wales? It really makes you realize how misinformation can be weaponized. And it's not just about sowing confusion anymore. It's a tool for manipulation, for pushing agendas, and even for warfare.
These unfounded claims about the princess's health were not random. The research indicates a concerted effort by a Russia-based disinformation group. It's not just about the royals. It's a part of a wider context. The same accounts were also spreading content opposing France's backing for Ukraine. It's a multi-front battle.
Exactly. And this isn't their first rodeo either. This group has a history of eroding support for Ukraine following Russia's invasion. The way they latch onto an existing story, add to the chaos, and fan the flames, it's hard to separate the coordinated disinformation from individuals sharing conspiracies.
That's true. And these tactics are not random, they're quite calculated. For instance, the use of copypasta, identical phrases being churned out by multiple accounts, or the creation of new accounts to spread nothing but royal rumors. It's a well-oiled machine.
Right you are, Linda. And it's not just about the big players. There's also a business side to this. Troll farms, likely in Pakistan, were reportedly hired to spread these messages. It's a global network, exploiting our curiosity, our fears, and our biases.
But there's also a glimmer of hope, Mark. After the princess's video about her cancer treatment, many social media users recognized the real harm caused to those at the center of such frenzies. It's a reminder of the human element amidst all the noise and chaos.
Story number 3. In a report from Al Jazeera, French President Emmanuel Macron has shifted towards a more aggressive foreign policy stance, suggesting the deployment of Western troops to fight Russia in Ukraine. This change is driven by concerns about Russia's hybrid warfare tactics, a desire for Europe's strategic autonomy from the U.S., and worries about a potential second Trump presidency. Macron's tougher approach has been welcomed by Eastern and Central European countries supportive of Ukraine. Would you believe it, Linda? Macron's recent hawkish stance on Ukraine, it's a pretty clear signal that he's pushing for strategic autonomy for Europe, especially from Washington.
It's a significant shift from his initial diplomatic approach. It's like he's trying to send a message to the world that Europe can stand on its own. This shift seems driven by the fear of a potential second Trump presidency and the unpredictability it could bring to global politics.
Yeah, I got that vibe too. And let's not forget about the increasing threat of Russian aggression. Macron is aware of the potential dangers of cyber warfare and misinformation campaigns. France, along with other European nations, has been on the receiving end of these attacks.
And that's where the concept of strategic autonomy comes into play. The world has seen such shifts in power relations before: the rise of the European Union, Asia's desire for autonomy during the Cold War. It's a reaction to changing global dynamics, and it's fascinating to see it unfold.
Macron's words have already stirred up some reactions. While the idea of sending Western military forces to Ukraine has been mostly rejected by France's NATO allies, the countries closer to Russia, especially the Baltic nations, have welcomed it.
It's a complex situation, Mark. Macron's rhetoric, whether or not he follows through, has certainly gained him some favor in the eastern part of the continent. It's interesting to see how geopolitical dynamics can shift based on words and actions of key players.
Sure is, Linda. And it's not just about the current situation, it's also about the future. Macron is playing the long game here. He's trying to build a stronger and more strategically autonomous Europe. In doing so, he's acknowledging the concerns of those NATO members near Russia and Ukraine.
That's true, Mark. It's a careful balancing act, and the stakes are high. The world is watching, and the decisions made now will have far-reaching consequences. It's a testament to how interconnected we all are today, and how the actions of a single country can ripple across the globe.
Story number 4. U.S. investors who backed ByteDance, the Chinese company that owns TikTok, are facing pressure to sell their stakes in the app due to national security concerns. A bill to force ByteDance to sell TikTok is making its way through Congress, and investors are under scrutiny for their investments in Chinese companies. ByteDance's high valuation presents challenges for investors, as the company is privately held and unlikely to go public soon. The Chinese government has also shown resistance to relinquishing control of TikTok, as reported by the New York Times. Are we witnessing a new era of tech investments, Linda? It's a complicated landscape with this ByteDance situation. You've got geopolitical tensions, economic implications, and then this increasing scrutiny from lawmakers. It's like a triple whammy, isn't it?
Yes, Mark. It indeed feels like a confluence of various factors. The geopolitical aspect can't be understated. Remember how we've seen this play out in the past with companies like Huawei? The economic consequences are also something investors have to reckon with. ByteDance being privately held means it's an illiquid investment. Investors can't just sell off their stakes.
Right, so the money's kind of stuck there, huh? And with this bill forcing ByteDance to sell TikTok, I mean, it's not like it's an overnight process, correct?
Even if a sale was easy to execute, the Chinese government seems reluctant to let go of a company like TikTok that has such a significant influence. They even moved to block a deal for TikTok to American buyers a few years ago. This congressional bill mandating ByteDance to divest from TikTok has also been met with condemnation.
So it's like a catch-22, right? Caught between a rock and a hard place. But isn't this also about the broader narrative of U.S. investments in China? I mean, we've seen Biden's administration curb U.S. investments there, and then you've got states like Florida passing laws to sell off stakes in China-owned companies.
We're seeing an increasing trend of divestments and legislation that's clearly linked to geopolitical tensions. It's not just about the individual companies anymore. It's also about how these decisions are part of a larger narrative and how they might shape the future landscape of tech investments.
Sounds like a real tightrope walk for investors. Thanks for the insight, Linda. It's definitely a lot to mull over. Story number 5. In a report from Al Jazeera, Visa and MasterCard have agreed to a $30 billion antitrust settlement to lower credit and debit card fees for U.S. merchants. The settlement aims to reduce swipe rates, cap fees, and allow merchants to offer discounts or surcharges on cards with higher fees. The deal must be approved by a judge and may face objections from small banks and credit unions. Critics believe the settlement may not go far enough in addressing merchant complaints about high fees. Do you believe this, Linda? Visa and MasterCard have reached an antitrust settlement worth an estimated $30 billion to limit credit and debit card fees for merchants. That's a hefty sum. It's the outcome of a nationwide lawsuit that began back in 2005, and it's supposed to alleviate the financial burden on merchants who have accused these card companies of charging inflated swipe fees.
Yes, Mark. It is indeed a significant development. The settlement, if approved by the court, could mark a significant shift in the power dynamics within the financial marketplace. These anti-steering rules, which barred merchants from directing customers towards cheaper payment methods, created a sort of monopoly, and the removal of these provisions could lead to more competition and possibly better pricing for consumers.
And it's not just about the money. It's about the principle. Small businesses make up more than 90% of the settling merchants. This sends a clear message to all market players about the importance of competition and fairness. It's a victory for capitalism and free markets in my book. But I do wonder, is it enough to shake things up, or is it just a drop in the bucket, like the Retail Industry Leaders Association suggests?
While this settlement is a big step towards fairness in the marketplace, it's also important to remember that it's not a panacea. Some opponents believe it may not go far enough, and there could be potential complications. For instance, small banks and credit unions might object because big retailers could negotiate deals with larger banks for cards that offer discounts at checkout. This could create a new set of challenges.
Right. And it's also interesting to consider the role of the consumer in all of this. Many merchants already warn customers at checkout that they will pay more using cards instead of cash. Now, with more discretion to offer discounts or impose surcharges on cards with higher interchange fees, we might start seeing more of this. It could shift the consumer behavior and possibly lead to a wider acceptance of cash or other payment methods.
This change could ripple out to impact consumer spending habits, which could, in turn, have broader implications for the economy. Also, with the increased transparency and potential for competition, it's possible that we'll see changes in how credit card companies and banks approach their fee structures. It's going to be an interesting time to watch the dynamics of the financial marketplace.
That's it for this morning. Have a great day and see you all tomorrow.
5 at 8 is researched, written, and performed by artificial intelligence. For more information, visit botcaster.ai.